Welcome back to the podcast. Today I have with me Reagan Isbell. Hi, Reagan.
Hi.
This is the first time I've seen Reagan in 3 months-ish. Yeah,
too long.
In a long time. But through social media, the power of social media, I've been able to keep up with your mm-hmm. summer.
And postcards.
And postcards. That was really cool. So, yeah. I guess, did you just move in yesterday?
Yeah. I got back in on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Sunday after I went to a lake house with my roommate, mm-hmm. Kate, and some of our other friends as, like, our last celebration before school starts, and then moved in, and now I'm here living the college life again.
There you go. And you must have, it's going to be a big difference between the college life versus the summer you just had working. Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I was thinking that, like, working in an internship mm-hmm. where you're around everyone is older than you, mm-hmm. and then transferring back to the college life where you are around, like, just other people your age and
yeah.
much different kinds of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Interesting, but exciting.
Yeah. Whenever you, because this is like your first formal internship, mm-hmm. going into it, did you have like any reservations or were you nervous beforehand? Like, how did you feel going into it?
Yeah. So my internship, just overall, I was doing research at Houston Methodist Hospital in the Orthopedics and Musculoskeletal Regeneration Department. And I will be honest, I was not the most excited for it because I didn't think that I would really like research. I thought that it was more of like a solitary environment where you're just working in a lab all day, kind of slaving away. And knowing that I am a super extroverted person, I didn't think I would be super fulfilled by those really like small tasks. But so I wasn't overly excited for it. But that completely changed as I worked there this summer and realized, first of all, just how important research is to any sort of development in medicine. And then also, it's an incredibly collaborative thing. It's mm-hmm. almost more collaborative, I think, than some of the other, like, either school environments or other things, because it's so specialized that each person in the lab knows something that the other person doesn't know. So, like, everyone has to work together, and everyone yeah. is constantly working on different things and stuff. So I really, really liked it. I was definitely nervous at first and didn't expect to like it, and was pleasantly surprised and, of course, fell in love with it.
That's awesome. What about, like, socially? I know that's, mm-hmm. like, another thing that you don't really realize because you kind of take for granted in college. You're just always around your friends. Mm-hmm. But did you know people who are going to be working in the area? Were you friends with anybody? Like, how was that for you?
Yeah. So going into it, so this was through a program that's, so it's the Houston Methodist Summer Undergraduate Research Institute, but they have a connection with my scholarship, so there was a lot of maybe like 40-ish A&M students that were going to be working in the research institute at the same time, but it's a 10-floor institute.
Yeah.
And there was only there's three interns in my lab, one of them from A&M, and then one of them was a med student from Mexico. And I lived with four girls this summer. One of them had a similar internship, and then two of them had different internships, so it was good, comfortable enough that I knew some people going in. And then, like, allowed me the platform to then make a lot of new friends. So I got to know, like, the med student from Mexico, and then also mm-hmm. got to know, joined a Bible study with a bunch of girls who were all post-grad. So some of them were married, some of them were teachers, some of them were PhD students, yeah. some of them are pregnant. Like, it was crazy seeing all these things that are happening in the life after me. Yeah. So the social part I was actually really excited for, and mm-hmm. got to meet so many cool people. And then even the people I worked with. Uh-huh. They, like, all my interns, or not my interns, all my mentors and stuff were so friendly, and they were so helpful, and as I told you, they're all Italian, and so uh-huh. they were so fun, and they, like, brought us food and everything, and made work so fun.
Yeah. How did you like living in Houston?
Better than expected uh-huh. as well. First, I was definitely confused by, number one, the roads and uh-huh. the weather.
Yeah.
Like, it was just raining. Different than here in College Station, it was just, like, raining mm-hmm. every afternoon. And I was like, wow, I'm in the tropics. Or I'm like, I don't know, what is this, the swamp? Like, what is going on? Uh-huh. And it was crazy rain. And then I wasn't used to the roads either. And I don't know if you've noticed, like, driving down, like, Med Center in downtown, but there will, like, be a lane, mm-hmm. and then the lane on the side of the road just switches, and it goes all sorts yeah. of different directions, and then they create the lane, and then they delete it again
yeah.
really fast. And I was like, what in the world? Which is so confusing to drive uh-huh. in the rain. But then after that, I really liked it. I liked yeah. being around I really like the like Montrose area.
Mm-hmm. Montrose was nice.
Yeah, so much like the thrift stores and all the different food and having so many different things so nearby. And mm-hmm. I also tried a bunch of different workout places. Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of like the city life. Yeah. There's so many things to do and everything is 20 minutes away, whatever I wanted to go to. Since mm-hmm. I lived in the middle, you could just get on a highway and go in any direction.
Yeah. How did it compare to Dallas? Because you're from where in Grapevine?
Yeah, so I'm from a suburb. So I'm from the town like where the airport is. Mm-hmm. So the DFW airport, like Grapevine, Colleyville. And it's a suburb that's closer to Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. But like if you drive at a time when there's no traffic, it's like 20, 25 minutes from Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. We go during traffic like an hour-ish. Yeah. So yeah, compared to the two of those, I am definitely more partial to Fort Worth over Dallas. I think it's more homier and the people a little nicer. And mm-hmm. I kind of like the cowboy vibes. Mm-hmm. I know not everybody feels that way, though, so it's okay. but I found just because Houston is, like, just one city in the mm-hmm. middle with, like, the epicenter in this middle and then everything, like, flowing out of it. And either it's, like, a residential area and then suddenly it's a bunch of businesses and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just so big mm-hmm. instead of being split into the two different cities.
Yeah.
But the traffic also wasn't near as bad as I was expecting. People told horror stories. Yeah, in Houston. So definitely different than Fort Worth. It didn't have like the stockyard energy or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I still liked it.
Very nice. Yeah. I mean, I've grew up in Houston my whole life. That place is just, it's a good, unique place. I think especially on a non-COVID year when things are opened up and there's a lot of concerts nearby mm-hmm. and Astros games, like it's a really nice environment. I am surprised though that you did not run into any traffic issues. But maybe like you said, it's because you were in the city.
Yeah.
I know, like, a lot of people who live in the suburbs have to drive into the city. That's when a lot of the traffic mm-hmm. comes. So I'm glad you didn't have to face that.
I would see the traffic out of my window, but I didn't have to sit in it pretty much.
That's good. Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, so your internship was, you know, more medical route.
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious, what's your undergraduate degree in?
My undergraduate is biomedical engineering with a minor in Spanish.
With a minor in Spanish. So first, let's unpack the minor in Spanish.
Oh, I would love to.
What made you want to do that?
So Spanish, first of all, I think it's just such a beautiful language. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds like cheesy, but it's just so pretty, like hearing it spoken and then even like seeing it read and just like the way that the words flow together. It's just, how can you not love it? And so I took, I don't even know anymore. I think 4 years of Spanish in high school. Mm-hmm. I think I took it every, no, I didn't take it senior. I don't know. I got to AP Spanish 4, whatever that was at some point. And I really liked that. I liked what learning another language did to my brain, like mm-hmm. being able to it allows you to like think about words differently and stuff and like mm-hmm. thinking in those two different ways, but it also allows you to connect to so many different people mm-hmm. that like it's a whole another group of people that I normally wouldn't get to mm-hmm. talk to or wouldn't get to talk to as easily. So I found like I went on a couple trips with my church to Costa Rica, or even in my city there is like a pretty not like a solid Hispanic population. Mm-hmm. And so with that, I found like, oh, because I'm able to like understand this language, I'm kind of able to like reach into like a couple different cultures that I normally wouldn't be able to like understand or talk to as well. So I love that aspect. And of course, like I just love people so much. So being able to do that is really important, but more than just like a personal interest, my like future interest for my career with medicine is that I'm hoping to at some point work either abroad or like even in my community and in my particular community, like a more like lower income area
mm-hmm.
in that case was more Hispanic, but just like in general, mm-hmm. being able to have those access to other people then makes my role as a physician a lot better, because then I can, because part of being a physician is not just like knowing the medical knowledge, it's being able to translate it to the people you're helping. And so I wanted that so I would be able to connect better.
I like that. And too, like, I think, like what you said, being a physician, and you can't, it's not just like simply prescribing medicine. Mm-hmm. It's like understanding the person, mm-hmm. how they're feeling. And I think that's really cool. I love when people like look into other languages and they branch out, because the world really like opens up to once you even know like one other language.
Exactly.
It's really nice.
For sure. And it was so nice. Like taking it with all my like heavy engineering mm-hmm. courses, having another class to kind of look forward to that was, and it was with people I would never normally have classes with, like mm-hmm. different like liberal arts majors or communications majors. And mm-hmm. it's cool getting to work with like people that aren't just engineers all day and have something else to look forward to in my classes and get really cool professors. Mm-hmm. So I've really loved it. I've loved going off the beaten path with the engineering stuff.
It's a good change of pace. What building is that? Are your classes in?
I've had the academic building before. Oh, wow. So yes, okay. I have gotten to go to the bathroom with the view. I love that. And then also last year, my other one was in the chemical engineering building. Oh, so wow, okay. Who even just knows what's going on there? Yeah, they're all over the place.
Yeah. What about your what about biomedical engineering?
Okay.
What made you interested in that?
So the truth of the story is I came into college. I mean, honestly, I didn't even know what an engineer was until I was 16. I thought it was the person who drives the trains because of the engine. But it's not. Uh-huh. I know that now. But honestly, I came into college and I wasn't sure. I knew that I really liked science and I knew that I really liked helping people. And I wasn't sure if that was going to be in the medical route or the engineering route. And I said, oh, a major that has both of these names in it. Uh-huh. I don't have to make a decision yet. Perfection. I love it. Uh-huh. And so I originally came in not wanting to, thinking I wanted to go into industry or possibly doing prosthetics or something like that. I knew I still like wanted to work with people, so I didn't think I would overly like research. I was pleasantly surprised in that way. Mm-hmm. But just kind of going through college and hearing different perspectives and stuff, I found that definitely my calling is to work like specifically with the people that I am serving, whereas otherwise, instead of having like a more broader impact, having a more like focused. And so that's why I've decided to go to med school.
There you go. And that decision was made not freshman year, but like
sophomore. Yeah, that was no, yeah, okay. Middle of sophomore year is when I applied and kind of threw it all in there and went for it.
Yeah. What does that program look like?
Yeah. So the program that I applied to, so it's the engineering to medicine program through A&M. So they have a couple different ways it happens, either before your freshman year is that there's a pathway in, or also in the middle of your sophomore year is a pathway into the A&M med school from engineering. Yeah. So you kind of do the application. So I did it obviously during my sophomore year. Mm-hmm. You do the applications that you would do when applying to med school. So you write that beautiful personal statement.
Yeah.
You get the letters of recommendation, fill out every activity you've ever done in your entire life for that's healthcare related or volunteering related. And like talking about yourself and stuff, resumes and everything, you know, we get the application grind and interview and everything like you would for med school. Mm-hmm. And so once I received that acceptance, now it's a conditional early assurance that as long as I get a certain score on the MCAT and fulfill all the other requirements that they have for me while I'm at A&M, then I'm in A&M's med school. Mm-hmm. And then through that, I'm also taking another second route, which is part of A&M, or Texas A&M NMed, which is a new medical school program that they have combined with Houston Methodist, which is the hospital I worked at this summer, which is really cool, already starting those connections. Mm-hmm. So that med school is in Houston. It's a really new med school. I believe that they only have their third year class right now, so they haven't even fully graduated their MDs. But the goal is to create physician years, which are able to speak to both the engineering and medical side. So you graduate with an MD and a master's in engineering. Wow. And yeah, the goal is so that these doctors who are practicing with their patients are also able to then translate that to the engineers and explain like what they need, and then also understand the importance of research. And so the actual days in classes, I think, are really focused on teamwork and research, and also like different things, preceptorships and stuff. So it seems really, really interesting. I'm excited for it. That's
super cool. I'm not sure if you would know this, but like, let's say, you know, at the end of all this, you complete your you graduate from the EnMed program. So like companies like Stryker, right?
Yeah.
Would you'd be the one pretty much talking to who employees there and saying, hey, I have a patient that is going through this or whatever, and I need this and this specification. Like, is that
exactly? Okay. Yeah. From what I've spoken to the program leaders, it seems like, honestly, you can do whatever you want with the degree once you're done because you got a lot of letters after your name. Yeah, and you understand.
It's a lot.
But the goal is, that you are a practicing physician who's then able to talk to people either like in research and design in universities and hospitals or actual companies, kind of explaining what the needs are in your lab. So if like your certain like intubation tube is like facing the wrong way and you need a different like a different balloon or something, you're able to like actually explain that to Stryker or those other companies or like the hospitals and universities who are creating it in research and design.
That's That's a big decision to do, like, sophomore year. So it what? Is. So what made you, like, what made you so sure of that? That was a path for you and not something else.
Yeah, it was. Believe me, a lot of journaling, maybe a bit of tears, a lot of really fast runs late at night while I was thinking about it. Part of it was, and then also, yeah, like a lot of prayer, talking to my family about what I actually see myself doing. There was a little bit of freedom knowing that, okay, it is early assurance, but also conditional acceptance in that, like, if I decide to change my mind or if I don't fulfill the requirements, I'm not bound by my heart and soul. And if I can still, if I apply to another med school, I just forfeit my spot here. So it's not 100% binding, but obviously I think it's a great opportunity that, and the more that I've like spent time and met people who are in the program, I've really enjoyed it. And it was, also a way to, I did like kind of get to avoid the really stressful process of applying to med school with all the match days and all the scary things that I've seen on TikTok and read about on the internet. So it was very scary at the time, but now that I've like done it and kind of made that leap, I'm having like a lot of peace and a lot of confirmation of I'm really happy with this decision as of right now. Who knows what the future holds, but I'm looking forward to it.
That's good. I'm glad. So this is kind of changing gears a little bit. Love it. This is going to be my way of, I think it's an awesome segue. So, you know, we talk about being a physician, we talk about medicine, all that is very much, you're pretty much serving other people, right? So I would like to know, what are some of your favorite moments where you've served other people?
Oh my gosh!
And it could literally be anything. It could be a formal, like, hey, this is a volunteer experience, or it could be maybe you were either a mentor or a counselor or whatever to whoever.
Well,
so it could be anything.
You know how people say that there's like the five love languages?
Yeah.
I think that we just created another, which is you asking me to talk about my favorite services because I just love it so much.
Yeah.
There's just so many. I think, because I would say that service was probably, like, if I had to break it down into like my top three values of my life, it would definitely be in. In those three, like, I think it's super important. It's why I'm choosing what I want to do both in my future and also like how I involve myself while at A&M and even in high school and stuff too. It's just super important to me. And I've spent a lot of time reflecting and trying to figure out why I care so much about this or like, where did it come from? So I think my like first answer, like my first favorite memory that I think is related to service goes, kind of all ties back to my family and the way that I was raised. I've kind of done like some more thinking recently and going back through some memories and stuff. And I realized that both of my parents are very, servant hearted people in different ways. Like I remember I have like a bunch of weird memories of, I didn't understand it at the time, but now that I look back, I realize what my dad was doing, like paying for someone behind him in the drive-through line. I remember like being at Walmart and being annoyed that we were stuck in the car while my dad was like helping put this lady's bike in the back of her car and I was or like her like new her son's new bike and I was like, why do we have to sit for so long? But I didn't realize like what we were doing. We were driving to these random people's places to drop stuff off, or when he turned 40 he ran 40 miles to raise money for a home for women near where we live. Which I think just kind of starting that really young and seeing how important that is kind of changed how I, or not changed, but it molded who I wanted to be. And then same with my mom. Hers is definitely like the way that she works and connects with people. And she's always trying to like plan things and like understand people and also include them in everything that we do is some really important values that I learned from them. And then from that, our church is an incredibly service-minded church. I'd say that's like our, their like number one value is like they find that like, the way that you, like, first you, like, you meet people's needs in order to, like, show them the love of Christ. And so with that, I obviously grew up doing all sorts of things. Like, either, like, we would make lunch in the summers for different people in our community or going on, like, actual service mission trips, like, building wheelchair ramps or redecking roofs, which I have, I could talk, we could make an 1,800-hour-long podcast of me talking about mission trips and stuff and how it, I loved being able to spend my summers doing that and everything. And also what I think was really important was growing, was looking up at, was there was people in my church who, they were really successful people, really affluent, really doing well, like in their social life and their job and everything. And instead of just like taking all of that success and wealth and everything and keeping it for themselves, they used that platform, whatever it was, to then give back to the church. But that's not even just in money. Like someone I know who's a really good accountant then help the church with some of those things, or someone who's a really good carpenter would come and help us on mission trips. So it's not just the money you have. It's just using whatever skills you have to help other people, whether that is teaching or just anything. I think it's just so important. That kind of shaped what I want to do now. And then I would say probably some of my favorite memories of like personal service was definitely on, there's so many mission trips and stuff that I went on where I found that like there's the work that you're doing physically where you're like building that wheelchair ramp and like helping that lady like get out of her house now or something like that, or like going to Costa Rica and doing different things there, like with the bringing stuff for the community there. And there's, first of all, there's the physical service you're doing, but there's also just the time that you spend getting to know the people that you're working for. And that's something I learned like from sixth grade to high school, or to I graduated, is I would go on one every summer, and I found like as I got older that was more important to me, like actually stopping and getting to know the people. And it's not just about producing a product, it's also about the relationship that you build along the way and like the people that you're serving. It's both physically and emotionally, which I think is super duper cool. And then now that I'm in college, kind of carrying that value through, my most recent favorite service thing that I've gotten to be a part of is Ags Reach, which you were actually the one who connected me into that. So thank you very much. You're for very welcome. Changing my life in that small way. So Ags Reach, as you already know, but just to put it out there, is a student org that supports a nonprofit, which is the Reach Project, which is a more recent nonprofit that's about 4 years old now, started by a graduate of A&M who saw that there was a need in the A&M support staff, so like the custodians, the lunch people, the lawn maintenance, just those kind of jobs that are that they're like charted out, like Chartwell's like the one, and they use like secondhand companies to do those things. And so because they're not hired by the state, they don't have like benefits or anything that other employees that would be hired by the state would have. And so there's just a lot of struggles with certain things that they face, such as like not having as much housing or being able to get here. Many of them don't have cars. And so the nonprofit is there to just kind of advocate for them and support their needs. So short term, their goals are like helping them with like health care and things like that, but long term, it's getting affordable housing here in College Station. And then the student org, which is Ags Reach, is there to kind of incorporate students into this need, because I mean these are the people, they are choosing to work here at A&M, and they like come here, and they're like the ones who work every day to make A&M the place we know and love, and we get to benefit as students. And why we love Aggieland so much, so to me it makes sense that we should try and give back, because of course like they're incredible. And they're Aggies too, and so we call them the essential Aggies, the all of these staff members. And so something that I got really involved with last semester was working on a health fair, which I know you heard about as we were doing it. So it was a drive-through health fair that was focusing specifically on like heart health and nutrition, because that is something that was kind of faced by this community here, but just in general, also COVID, because that's such a real need right now. And showing that, because education is like one of the first steps to actually helping you improve in life, and not just like staying in one place, because then it allows you to know what resources are around you, or be able to like take that for yourself instead of someone just telling you like what you can do. By like, education is like a sustainable way to help you kind of live the life that you want to live and move up in the way. And so that's why I think that's so important, tying in with education of healthcare, because you don't even know all these resources that are around, or like these really important things that can help you a lot in the long run and stuff. That was a really cool thing to get to do, and hearing about that. There was actually at the end, it was like a really stressful thing was planning it, but I also like loved getting to see the fair and seeing it run so well, because I was kind of on the running end or the managing end. I didn't get to really interact with any of the essential Aggies at the health fair, but after the fair was over, Max, the CEO of the Reach Project, called me, and he told me that they had an event a couple days later with the essential Aggies, and some of them were there. And this lady, one of the ladies, came up to him and was like pointing out her wrist to him, and he was like, I don't understand what was going on, or like why she was pointing out her wrist. And then he realized that she was showing him the fitness watch, which we had given out at the health fair, and she started crying because she said like this is something, like, I've been praying for something like this to be able to, like, be able to, like, take more control over my health and everything. And this is something I'd never be able to afford on my own. But thank you for giving this to me, because now I'm able to, like, take this on for myself and do this something that I've always wanted to do. So that was really touching to know that even just for this one lady, like, the work that we did mattered and that it was for a reason. So that's my lip service.
That's awesome. That makes my heart so warm. I love hearing stories like that. Mm-hmm. And I know, like the Reach Project has impacted so many of those essential Aggies. I remember seeing, like, a fundraiser of, I forgot who it was, but they hadn't, like, their, I guess, housing lease payments or whatever, they wouldn't have been able to afford rent for another month. And so they posted the GoFundMe on Twitter, like, Instagram, Facebook, and had, like, 12 months or whatever paid for, or something similar to that. It was, like, last fall, but it was super nice. He went from the person, I forgot who it was, but the person went from not having a place to live the following month to, like, having a stable place to live for, like, a year before, like, to get finances under his belt. And that's what I love, too. And I think that just kind of embodies what A&M is, is, like, the people are so willing to help at the drop of the hat.
Exactly.
And people are so giving and... I mean, I love service, too. It's really... I love hearing you talk about it, too. That's awesome.
That's so cool. With the Reach Project, the cool thing about it is that it's not just, like, an org that you have to be a part of. It's what I've really seen it even grow in the past year is that a bunch of different orgs, like women's orgs or sororities or fraternities or men's orgs or flows and stuff, are finding their own different ways to connect with Reach, because, I mean, these people serve all of us as Aggies. Yeah. So it's really cool seeing it. It's not just for one group of students. Like, if you're in that club, it's for everybody.
Yeah.
Which I think is just really cool.
I like it. Something you also mentioned too while you're talking about just like service in general was it's not just about like the physically serving people and, and building things, but also like connecting with them. And that's something I've noticed that you do very well. I noticed that about you from the first time I met you as a freshman in the Wise and Baker rooms before and after your interview. You were just so like bubbly and not even like, I wouldn't even say like talkative. You were just like, you're just so full of energy and charisma. And I just remember talking with you and I just figured, you know, most people there, most people anywhere, like if you don't know them, you like talk to them, make small talk for like 2-3 minutes. And then you either dip, you find somebody else. And I mean, you were a freshman and you there's a lot of new people around you. And I remember, like, not trying to leave our conversation, but, like, okay, like, you know, this is about the length of conversation that's going to last, and she's probably going to, like, leave. I wasn't going to take it hard or anything. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dang, this girl, she wants to get to know me. Like, I'm not even on staff or anything, and I don't know, she's, like, she just wants to get to know me. I thought that was really cool. So I'm just curious, do you feel like you've, like, always been like that your whole life, just very like curious about other people, or was that something that was developed throughout college, high school?
That's a good question. Asking Reagan why she is the way that she is. Who knows? I mean, I actually have thought about that a lot recently about the first time we met at that free interview and everything. I think I was just so excited to like meet new friends and like get to know you, because I also like saw that energy in you and I saw that it was reciprocating. Yeah, I was like, oh, this is an exciting conversation. I love it. Yeah. Which is so fun. But in answer to your question, I think that I would say, so I think it is kind of the way that I naturally am, and it's definitely, but it's been encouraged and kind of supported by some experiences that I've had and some things that I learned. Like, one of my parents' favorite stories that they've been telling a little bit more recently is on the way, so I was, like, a baby, so I wasn't able to talk yet, so, like, less than 1 year old, and they'd, like, taken me to some sort of work party, and the party ended at, like, 11 or something, and I don't know what they were doing with the baby still out at 11, but they were coming home. I mean, I was the oldest one, so they were still trying to live their lives. And, you know, most babies are supposed to be passed out on the way home at 11 p.m.
Yeah.
But instead, I was in the back seat just like, da, da, like talking away, like reliving all the conversations of the evening that apparently I as a baby had had at this party.
Yeah.
Just so excited. So I think like naturally that is kind of the way that I am, like wanting to be around people and get to know them. But I think more specifically in the, instead of just like being in the center and like always having to be around people, but the where it actually comes into getting to know them and listening kind of came, I think, throughout high school, realizing like the diversity of the people around me, even just in my little group and community, and just how like interesting people are. Like everyone is, like I think of like the life I've lived and all the different thoughts and opinions I have and all my like little random like quirky memories I've done and all the little things, and like realizing that every single person is just, it's just like that, like has just as much to share and just as many interesting things that they've lived through and just as much like really interesting opinions that they have. And so I just want to learn about them and learn about more of them. And so just, and just getting there and sitting and listening to someone, and I, you know, like just getting to hear, also it's such a gift to be able to hear people talk about like what they're passionate about and like however much they choose to share with you about their life is also such a gift. Because like every person is so like unique and special and like is such an important individual on their own. And so just getting to hear a little bit about it, I think is just the most exciting thing ever. It always, that's why now I'm always excited whenever I drive home from things as an adult, because I'm just thinking about all the people that I got to talk to that day and get to know. So, but it's also been really encouraged throughout college as I'm kind of broadened my range a little bit more now and meeting an even more diverse range of people. And then through my internship, like even more diverse people from different countries and stuff. It's just so interesting, and I think it's only going to continue to grow as I've gotten older. But as for you, what's your perspective on like the the getting to know people versus like your drive in a conversation or like a social group, whether it's like a small or bigger one?
I mean, I think for that question, I definitely am okay with being in a large group setting. Like, just like you, I'm very extroverted. Like, we're very similar. So we can pretty much, if we're around people, we're fine. But I do prefer, like, smaller groups because I think over time I've realized that I can't do surface level for too long. And we don't even have to talk about, like, what's the greatest difficulty in your life or whatever. But, like, if we just talk about the weather or your day and that's all we talk about, or the food here, then I just feel very exhausted because naturally I just want to sink down and get to know you, but I have to actually exert more energy to keep up a surface level conversation. I have to think about like what's a topic I can ask them that's not going to be like too deep or whatever, you know? And so I think for me, once I left high school and I realized like I had probably two or three friends that I stayed in contact with, and other than that, I realized how surface level a lot of my high school friendships were. They were just, oh, we're in the same club, we're in the same sport or whatever, and I don't really have to get to know you. I'm already doing all this activity, all these activities with you. So that was the basis of our friendship. Just us, you know, marching band together or being on a baseball team together. I didn't really make an effort to know anyone. And it really showed when my first year of college came. And, you know, that first 2 weeks of college, it's hard to meet people. Like, everyone wants to meet others, but you're meeting so many people that you just don't know who's going to stick, who's going to, you know? So during those times, I would be like, okay, I want to call home, but I want to call, like, my friends, who am I going to call? And I had like two or three people, like I said, that I would call, but I realized, dang, like I can't go about friendships the same way as I did in high school, as I did, as I'm going to do in college, if I want to feel at home here and feel like I'm cared for. And I realized the best way to do that was to like dive in, invest into a relationship with other people and like actually get to know them. So that's kind of my answer to that.
That's so cool. I love that. I definitely feel the same way.
No, it's nice. And I feel like you do that super naturally too. Like, it's so fun being able to just, like, if I'm in the same room as you, and I'm trying to think, maybe we've had a couple of interactions where, like, we're with, like, Kenzie, MC, and Aniru, and, like, it's just so nice to see. Okay, so, like, I think it was around Thanksgiving time.
The Friendsgiving.
And like I was the oldest person there. Like I didn't really have anything to offer. I was like talking with people still. But, like, it was just so nice getting to sit back and just watch you. Like, you're like a spark jumping from each person to person. Like, you're just lighting them up, and it's so cool. Like, I don't even know. Like, you go from person to person, and every interaction seems like so genuine. I think I said this in your nice thing, but like the way you make people feel, or at least from my perspective, I feel like the way you make people feel, like you make them feel like they're the most important mm-hmm. person in the whole world in that one conversation, and you just pay so much attention to them. And I think that's just, it's a very good quality, first of all. It's a very awesome trait. I think it sets you apart too. It's a lot of people have that ability to like be present in the moment, I feel, but to like actually be invested all the time. And I don't know. You keep that up.
Thank you. Yeah. I just think that's so important. And I definitely do like, I think it's like a natural thing in me, but also something that I really try and do on purpose because I do care. And I mean, it's what I'm genuinely feeling at the time. But yes, like that person is so interesting and so exciting to me because they are. Like I just talked earlier about how interesting I think people are. And then also I found that like, yeah, like if people feel important and wanted and valued, like I see that they are, my goal is to kind of like have everybody kind of see in them what I see in them, like see in themselves what I see in them.
Yeah.
And I think like, it's kind of like that, once again, that platform that like, if people believe that about themselves and like they're able to do their most good and like the whole world is a better place if everyone is able to do the things that they are best at, like I was talking about earlier, like why not like use the skills that you have to help others. So if everyone feels like as important and valued and wanted, then they're able to do like whatever they're best at, whether it's singing or teaching or like figuring out how to code really important software things. And I just think like that's, it makes the whole world a better place. So why not live your life like that?
Exactly. I love that. Last thing I kind of want to talk about is I would love to know about Lauren and Kate. I'd love to know like how you guys met, how you guys grew close, how you guys even started talking about like living with each other. And seems like you're going to be with each other for the rest of college.
Oh my God. Oh, for sure. For sure. Oh my gosh. You just keep talking about all of my favorite topics in this one podcast. Shout out. So Lauren and Kate, or Kate Dixon and Lauren Stapleton, are my roommates. I love them to bits and pieces and to death and back. They're just the best. I did not get to live with them this summer, though I'd have a great time with my roommates this summer in Houston. It was so much fun. I did miss just the other two halves of my life. They were both in Dallas living at home, working at their cool badass lady internships, big girl boss moments. But so Kate is from my high school, so I've known her since high school. We weren't like super duper bestie friends ever, like until we met like junior year. We were in the same physics lab group. Shout out to women in the STEM class that was mostly just guys by that point. So we met there, and then we were like similar like friend group senior year. We started like in like the same prom group together and stuff, and we came to college together with another one of our other friends, Eliza, who I ran cross country with. So Kate and Eliza lived together freshman year, and I wanted to branch out and meet new people, as I love to do. So I lived with another friend that I met on Facebook, who you know, we love, Livy Grant. Shout out to her as well. And it was so much fun living with her freshman year. And but the transition is she was in a sorority, so she had to move into the sorority house, and so it just kind of naturally flowed that I needed to find a new place to live. And then, you know, as we were just talking about the big craziness that happens at the beginning of freshman year, it's been really fun watching my freshman and my fish camp kind of go through that right now. Meeting all the sorts of different people and trying out all the different orgs and, not knowing what's going to last and what isn't. But I remember I'd gone to, like, a couple different things. I would, like, gone to, like, a free informational, I think, and maybe gone to some sort of engineering honors thing. And then I was at my interview for TANSA, which is the Texas A&M National Scholar Ambassadors, another organization I love. And I was at my interview for that, and this girl like walked up to me, and she was like, and I like recognized her. I recognized like her long brown hair and the ponytail, and I was like, she was like, "Hi, I'm Lauren," and I was like, "Hi, I'm Reagan." Like I remember, and she was like, "We've seen each other at a lot of different events, so I think that we should be friends." And that was the start of a beautiful love story. So we both got in TANSA together, and Free as well, and so that's where the little squad of me, Kate, and Lauren kind of came to be. And then we ate like tons of meals together freshman year and just got closer and closer and closer and realized that we definitely wanted to live together. Now we live in the Beehive, aka 907 Cross Street, apartment 1014B. Actually, I'm B, if y'all want to send me any letters. I just gave you my address on the internet. So we have so many chaotic moments in there, but I love it so much, and they just kind of like know how I think, and we just do like the silliest things in there, but I just love it, and they're always down for truly whatever adventure yeah. and talking about everything, and they just get me, and I love them so much.
Yeah. Actually, I just thought of another question kind of related to that, but remember that snow week?
Oh, yeah.
Or was snow 2 weeks or whatever? Everyone has a different experience then, and I was just curious, what was the outlook in your household at that time? Oh, how did you guys pass the time?
That is such a good question. I'm going to add that to my list of questions to ask people. So what we did in the Beehive, so we, living at Youth Center, we didn't fully lose power ever. We had rolling power basically the whole time. So at first it was like 4 hours off, 1 hour on, and then we slowly got a little crazy, worked our way up to like 1 hour off, 1 hour on. Mm-hmm. We played a bunch of games. Mm-hmm. A bunch of games. We talked about life and philosophy and demons, and we made pros and cons list for basically everything, both serious and not serious. And then also like some of my favorite memories of walking around. We tried to sled down the hill at Hensel Park, but College Station is so flat that the hill was not really ideal. And I remember like Kate like trying to like run and slide down it, but then she missed the sled, and then she ended up just sliding down, and then we tried to slide down in one of our like little bins that I store like stuff in when I moved into college, and that didn't really work. And then another of my favorite memories from that time is we decided to just walk to my boyfriend's house, he lives like all the way down Holloman. Also shout out to Cole. Hello.
Hi, Cole.
So kind of the opposite side of campus from where we were, but we were like, oh, we might as well go
historic
visit.
District?
No, like further, like West Holloman. So on the other side of Welburn.
Oh my gosh.
So, oh yeah, girls were on a hike for sure. But as we were walking through campus, just getting to see everybody, that was kind of like, in a way, seeing nature is healing. Like, oh my gosh, everyone's out and playing. And we walked to the ring and we like took like ring day pictures there, even though none of us had our rings yet. But I also remember Lauren doing the WAP dance in the snow, like right there, and landing in the splits and me taking a picture of her. And I think like that image in my brain perfectly sums up what Snow Week was like
for us. Yeah. I love hearing like what people did because, I mean, it's like going camping in the mountains and you don't have access to like electricity or like your phones and Wi-Fi. And it's like, I love hearing just creative ways people spend time. And it's also nice hearing that people just spend time together.
Oh, yeah,
like as
sure.
awful as it was good to like pause on school a little bit and pause. Like we had a crazy year with COVID, right? So like just spend more time with each other. Everyone's in the same area. And then like, walking through campus, you can't beat that.
I'm not gonna lie, I don't know about you, but that was already like a rough time of the semester for me. Like the February scaries were hidden with the school. And so it was nice to just like stop and like hang out and unpack and just like see my friends.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's good. So the final thing I will have you do is I want you to record a message for yourself in the future right here. So you're just gonna talk to future Reagan. You don't know how far in the future. But think of it as, like, something you would probably want to hear wherever you are. So, like, in 4 years, and I send you, like, hey, listen to, like, this point of the podcast, like, and it's just you talking to yourself.
Okay. I really like that. That's a cool idea. Let me think for a second.
I will start.
Okay.
Because I do this as well.
Okay.
Hello, Reagan from the future. I don't know how far in the future it is, but I do know that regardless of how much time has passed, you're still going to be that bubbly, charismatic, energetic, super caring and loving person that you are today. Probably going to be very stressed out with something, but I know that you're going to make it through. I think very highly of you, obviously. You can look back. Did I write you a nice things 2 years ago for Hudson?
I think so. I'm pretty sure. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you can look back at the nice things I wrote for you the past 2 years or the postcard I sent. Or I probably sent you a voice memo at some point.
Oh, I have them saved.
Just listen to that. You are an awesome person. You're amazing. So many people think highly of you. And you're just like... This is a little bit of a tangent. This summer, I decided to look more into, like, my personality is, like, a type 2 Enneagram. I'm not super, like, invested into the Enneagram, but I like using it as like a basis of like a guideline, right? And see like, okay, these are my tendencies. This is like why I do things or whatever. And I remember reading about something or listening to something, and I wrote it down, and there somebody had broken down Enneagram can be broken down, or like if you're type two, you can either be one of three things, okay? You can either be the manipulator, so that's a very unhealthy version of a type two. You can either be the special friend, which is the just baseline of a type two, or you can be the humble servant, which is the most healthy version of a type two. And as I was reading this and I was categorizing myself because I wanted to see, okay, where did I fall into? I found that I wasn't the most like proud of where I personally would have placed myself. But when I think of you, I think of you as like the most healthy version of a type two, which is a humble servant, where, you know, you don't need other people to tell you that you're like cared for to like be happy. Like I love the way you carry yourself. This is really long, I'm sorry. I love the way you carry yourself. I love the way that like you live life, and I think that so many people could benefit from just having you in their life, and you bring a lot of people happiness, me included. So keep it up. And so that's my long
thank you.
That's one of the longer messages I've said, but
you can be single tear over here. You can
like be your turn, Reagan. You. Future message
thank
to
you.
Yourself.
Okay. Hello, future Reagan. It is me, your favorite. One question I have for you is I'm wondering if my hair gets any curlier than this, because it's only gotten curlier throughout time. So just take a moment. Look at your hair. What does it look like right now? I don't know. But deep-wise, I would like to say, first of all, is something that, you know, that mom said a lot was that... remember, like, one of the most important things she told me, like, when coming to college was remember who you are and remember whose you are, because these things, like, change a lot. Like, we know that, like, the external stuff is just going to keep on changing, and sometimes, like, change is hard, realizing that, like, the things that you may, like, find a lot of peace in on the outside are, like, things that could go away, whereas, and that's okay because that's part of life and that's part of the beauty of life. But more like that internal peace comes from like knowing like where like your identity is founded and where you will be and what like you find value in what you do every day. And so whatever the heck that is, I'm kind of excited to know. I hope honestly that it's changed like three times since whatever I said in this podcast right now, because I'm hoping for a lot of, now I'm excited for a lot of change in my life and a lot of different, honestly, career paths and trying out different things and seeing where I find passion at the time. But I'd also say, remember, as of for me right now, I think that like two of my top values are compassion and service, and knowing that like whether that's in like a giant Broadway or also just like in the daily way that you live your life, like that's the most important thing, and that's what matters later on. It's like all the little people that you impact, both big and small. And I also want to say, yeah, that it can be, I don't know, whatever the heck that you're doing right now, it might be, yeah, like probably something really stressful. You've probably overcommitted yourself, and that's okay, because I know that's just mine/your personality, and that's probably not going to change. So with that, maybe just, I'd say, like, sometimes it's hard, but taking a step back and seeing that, like, why are you doing this? Is it, like, for those, like, values that, you know, like, for your family, or, like, for, like, those people you care about, or, like, for people that you don't even know but you still care about, or is it, like, fulfilling in that way? And then, like, if not, we don't have to keep doing it. Like, it's okay. So just, I know it's hard, but also, like, if it is for those things, then, like, even if you don't see it now, like, eventually it will be worth it. Because there is, like, always that beauty of the hindsight that will come eventually, and knowing why these bad things happen or why something was difficult at the time. And then my last thing I think that I would say is, actually I have two more things, is, like, never underestimate, or, and also, like, you'll never regret the power of being genuine, even if it seems like other people aren't being it, or, like, it's not really a time when you have to be the most, like, genuine version of yourself. But even if you're doing it when others aren't, you'll never regret doing that, because, like, of the, you have, like, I've already seen that in so many different ways when, like, I chose to, like, put just a little bit more of myself out there, and it ended up being really good for that relationship, for both me and that other person. And it doesn't hurt, like, even if they aren't interested at all, at all, it doesn't hurt to just put it out there because you never know what could happen. And then lastly, I'd say, remember the people and like remember that what you learned so much in college. Like I've really enjoyed right now, like being around so many different people and so many different people's perspectives and all the things that I've learned, like from my roommates, for example, or from the people I lived with this summer, or even just like getting to talk to Victor and seeing like how he chooses to spend his time and the reason that he's doing this podcast and even having me record this for myself right now is, I think, just really something that's so important and shows his character, and also just what something I think that in whenever future me listens to this, I want to look back and think about how can I incorporate some of those qualities into the way that I'm living right now. And so I think that's all I have to want to say to future Reagan. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you go and eat a popsicle or a snow cone soon. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. Mm-hmm. Reagan, thank you so much again for doing this last minute. I've always wanted to do this with you, and why not just a spontaneous podcast session?
Yeah, heck yeah. What is it? Is it a Tuesday afternoon? It is.
It is a Tuesday
afternoon. Podcasting up on a Tuesday afternoon. Big spontaneous. We love
it. It's fun, yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of this. I'll see you guys in our next one. Goodbye.
Bye.